For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
By way of introduction, I'm John Ross. I lead a home group in the college ministry with my wife and do some pastoral work for the church. You're here to learn about dynamic discussion. Let's do a quick show of hands here before we get rolling. How many people have led some sort of a discussion with maybe a house or a cell group or a home church or something like that? Awesome. So a lot of us have some experience. We're trying to maybe brush up on some of the basics and maybe learn some skills for taking our stuff to the next level. Awesome. So hopefully we'll be able to do that. Let's get into our crosshairs first, you know, just to make sure that we know what we're talking about here. When I'm talking about, you know, the kind of discussion leading that, you know, we're going to be covering here is really expository teaching of Bible books or, you know, related books, you know, a cell group, you do a Fernando book or a Clive Calver book or something like that, that alternates between short bursts of lecture and moderated discussion. And really what we are here to do is figure out, okay, how do we use discussion, not just as a perfunctory time to allow us to prepare a shorter lecture, nothing like that, but how do we use discussion as a tool that really engages people and puts them deeply into really edifying content? How do we allow the group itself to edify each other? You know, so it's not just us top down just spewing out content to our people. How do we facilitate something that's really going to be life-giving, that draws on the strengths and the experiences and the wisdom from an entire group of people, whether that's, you know, five people in a ministry house, whether that's, you know, 10 to 15 people in a cell group or a larger group in a home church. And so to do that, what I want to focus on is really three primary areas where I feel like are very important to leading a good discussion. And I think, you know, these are areas also where we experience a lot of fits. These are some of the areas that people find most difficult to master. Now, there's a lot of topics that we could have, you know, covered in the art and craft of leading discussion. You know, we could have talked about how do you put together an outline that's going to be really discussion-based. How do you take a passage of Scripture into something that's going to be good for discussion? We really don't have time to cover all of the areas, so we're going to focus on these three. I've titled them Create. Okay, that's the prep work that you do before you get into the actual meeting. This is how do we come up with really intriguing, engaging questions. We'll have some stuff on that. We're going to start to talk about delivering. Okay, you've gone through some of your outline to a point where you want to start a discussion. What does that look like? How do you launch that pod? You know, we want to start good conversations at key points in the teaching. And then also the actual leading or the guiding of the discussion. Once you launch that question and people are starting to think and respond, what does your role look like? How do we do that well to keep things going, to get more people involved and to, you know, make sure that things are going along a good trajectory? And so we've got those. That's our task at hand here. We're going to kind of take these one by one. If you've got questions or you need clarification, don't hesitate to raise a hand and stop us. You know, this is supposed to be pretty interactive. I've got some workshops and case studies for us to do, and we're going to be getting to talk back and forth some. So, area number one, create. How many people feel like, I don't know, yeah, we'll show hands. How many people feel like coming up with discussion questions is the most frustrating part of putting together their teaching? Okay, good, good. I've been in that camp as well. That can be a really frustrating thing. Sometimes you just feel like all the good questions have been asked. Maybe you feel like I just don't know what is going to get people involved. My home church is kind of a mystery in that way. Well, here's some things to think about. And I've experienced this truth the hard way many times. And it's the idea that when we're thinking about this, you know, the quality of the question has a lot to do with the quality. It's going to have a big impact on the quality of the response. When we can come up with some really unique interesting, well-worded questions, that sets us up in a very good way for some good responses. You know, a lot of people, I think, make the mistake that they put all their time into the lecture. They feel like if they can just draw home a couple of really key points, that whatever question they ask will just eventually get a response. And I think that's a mistake. I think we want to avoid that. We've got to work hard on crafting good discussion questions. So here's our first case study, okay? So you're in, let's say you're in a cell group setting. And when you're studying, you're working through the Gospel of John, you come to John 3. And we're going to cover verses 16 and 17, okay? This is the passage you kind of hone down, you funnel down to these two verses. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Okay, man. So, all right, so you're reading this. People are starting to be piqued about this amazingly deep theological passage. You've drawn out some points. And then somebody throws out this question. What are some reasons people don't want to accept a free gift? What do we think of this question? What might be some, do we think it works? Do you think that there's some problems here? What do we think about this question at this point in the teaching? Yeah, right here. Okay, so you're saying, okay, you'd have to do some sort of work to get to this question. Okay, that's probably wise. Yeah, right there in the back. Okay, so they're at least going into people's hearts and motives. It seems like, you know, God is trying to get us to look at and pay attention to something. Okay, maybe. Yeah, back there. Vague in what sense? I probably agree with you, but maybe you could explain that a little bit more. Okay. So you've got that weird, maybe not weird, but it's not borrowing from the language of the passage for sure. You're just kind of throwing out a common term that, you know, evangelical Christians use to describe the gospel. Okay. Yeah, Shelby. I think that's a pretty good point, and I think it probably lines up with what you're saying. On one hand, you kind of took a more positive route, like you could potentially build a bridge or a scaffold to put this question in place, but you guys are getting at the same thing, where essentially this is not quite anchored to this passage. Okay. Yeah, one more, right in the back. Okay, that might help. And the lady in blue, what was her name? Jill mentioned that, you know, you want to talk about motives. Maybe it would help that if you change the question to a more direct, you know, one-on-one kind of interaction, that you would maybe get more answers about motives. Okay, so it's not the worst question in the world, but I think we're seeing some key problems with a question like this. How many people have heard this question in a teaching before at Xenos? That's a problem. Okay, I'm not saying by any means that every question that we come up with or use has to be completely unique, like nobody's ever thought so deeply about this passage and come up with such an amazing erudite question. Okay, that's not our goal. But we should have as a goal to say something about this passage. This is one of the most beautiful things that has ever been put in print. Okay, this is one of the most cherished truths that we have as Christians. Why are we jumping away from this and going to, you know, people's stubborn responses? Okay, that seems like a problem here. I think a lot of times we get to a passage like this and we remember a question like this and we're like, oh, maybe that could work, because we are talking about the gospel. But, you know, I think maybe there could be a better question, especially if we're in a cell group setting. I think some other problems here. There's a very limited data set, okay? You know, there's probably a set of 4 to 6 right answers. Because when we're asking about why people don't accept a gift, that's not really open for interpretation. There's some analysis, but we're just listing off the reasons that people actually don't want to accept a free gift. So there's very low amount of diagnostic thinking or creative thinking. So what would be a good question, do we think, about a passage like this? What could be? Does somebody want to venture something that could be a good discussion question for a passage like this? Yeah, right here. Okay, so you're getting into a little bit of a riskier ground because we're asking for personal experiences. I think in a lot of groups that does play well, especially in a cell group. If we're asking for, maybe how we have personally experienced the love or the initiation of God in our lives, I think that could be pretty rich. Okay, good, right here.
This might character.
Good. Good. Yeah, okay. Now, that's a more theological question. I like to go there. Some people find that that can be a little risky. You don't want to force your group to just interpret the passage, okay? You wouldn't want to say, okay, what does John mean here? Because who knows? You're the teacher. They're supposed to be there learning. You can't presuppose that they're going to have the right answer. They already knew what John was saying. Why are they coming to your teaching? Okay? You also want to avoid speculation. What do you think this is about? Because that just opens it up wider. People are like, well, I think, and then they go into some story about their childhood that runs on for 9 minutes. Mistake. But I think what you're saying is pretty good. What are some key theological truths, or maybe some key truths or elements of God's love that we see in this passage? I think that could be pretty good, especially in a cell group. Because what are you doing? You're forcing people to really look at this passage on a deeper level. Now, you, as the teacher, have probably drawn out some theological points already. So, but you're going to be forcing people deeper. They're going to go in there and try to dig out and really pick apart. Man, okay, so God loved the whole world. That's way different than the way I love. I love a few people, God loved the whole world. His love is essentially a giving love. It's not a taking love. I wish the way that I felt about people was more like that. He gave his son that he's a father, and he gave up the greatest gift that he could ever have. I mean, people will be able to look at and analyze different elements of his love. And so in some ways, it's what you would call a thesis question, because you're asking people to look at and analyze, kind of the main point of these verses. But we're probably on safer ground than just asking people to interpret the passage or just give their speculation as to what it could mean. So it's a little bit different. So I think that's pretty good. Yeah. So what might be some key truths that we learn about God in these verses? Let's go ahead and do another one, Colossians 1. He is the one we proclaim, admonishing and teaching everyone with all wisdom, so that we may present everyone fully mature in Christ. To this end, I strenuously contend with all the energy Christ so powerfully works in me. Man, Paul's getting on a rant there. It's awesome. And then you hear somebody ask this question: what things do you think God uses to grow our faith? Got some commentary on what we think about this question? There's probably five answers, probably. Let's hear them. You know all five? Suffering. That's right. Yep. Okay. I was going to say, I just had you in class. You better know that. Okay, so there's a limited data set. What else? Anything, any other critique that we would offer to a question like this? Right here. It assumes prior biblical knowledge. Because it's not asking like, oh, maybe experiences has God used in your life to draw you closer to Him? That's a totally different question. This is a limited data set that you would only know if you've taken classes like LTC. That's why people take them. Excellent. Anything else? Right here. Excellent point. There's plenty of passages that talk about all the ways that God is graciously interacting with us to make us more strong Christians. Okay? This isn't one of them, really. I mean, it's more talking about how God strengthened Paul to go minister to these people, but I think you're hitting the nail on the head there. Yeah. So you're going to talk about this awesome passage about, that covers Paul's kind of summary vision of his ministry and personal discipleship, and then you're going to go into a question about, just kind of the means of growth. And we probably have heard this question in various forms, and I feel like it's not doing justice to the text here. Let's look at some other options. What do you think? Let's analyze this together. What steps could a worker take to keep Jesus at the center of his ministry? We feel that works. Feel like that's pretty good. Okay? Okay, yeah. So, ministry. Maybe you've thrown that term out in your discussion to this point. You know, if we're talking about Paul's ministry, the way that he served others. Maybe you can throw in that. But I think that's good. I think that's a good thing to watch for. We don't want to have discussion questions with a bunch of churchy language in them. That's very off-putting. Yeah, in the back again. I think there's probably some answers there, but I don't know if those are the only answers. I think you can admonish and teach people without having a focus on Jesus. I think, the ways that people act don't always line up with the things that they're focused on. And I think probably, I think that's probably a struggle for a lot of us. We, especially if we're in Xenos, we're doing a lot of ministry, we're serving a lot of people, but I think there's always the struggle to put self at the ministry instead of Christ. So I think you might be getting people just parroting what's in the passage, but I don't think exclusively. Yeah, Amy. See, I disagree with that. Yeah, because Jesus is the one we proclaim. Jesus is the message. Jesus is the ultimate goal of maturity. And then he's also the power source. So I would say, you probably would draw that out. So you draw those things out and you talk about how Christ-centered this is, then you would ask this question. But I think, your point stands that you'd have to do some work to point that out to people so it doesn't seem like it's coming out of the blue. Yeah, right here. Okay, yeah, I think that there is practical value here, especially if you've got people who you may be in the college group where I do most of my teaching. People are trying to build a ministry and there can be some competition, there can be some that kind of stuff, so you want to keep Jesus at the center and keep pride out. So there's a lot of practical application there. Yeah. Let's try one more on this. How might we strive? Okay, so you're setting up this question. You're talking about Paul is striving. He's straining. He is just charging towards the goal. These verbs in Greek imply the exertion of a great deal of effort and time and commitment. And then you throw out, how might we strive and labor in our ministry without falling into legalism? What do we think about this question? Excellent point. So this isn't maybe a bad question, but you have to at least explain this term. I think the rest, you probably, maybe ministry, like you mentioned, we'd have to explain those terms. But if we did, this question might have some value. Yeah, right here. I think for some reason. Okay, so you might have to do some work, not just explaining the passage, but explaining the antithesis. Another really good thing to have in a teaching. We'll see you next year. But yeah, so say maybe you work for it. It's like a lot of people strive, but then they get burnt out. Or a lot of people strive for a while, but then they think it's all about what they do. Maybe you lay out some antithesis, and then you get to this question. Yeah, I think you're right. You'd have to do that kind of work. Yeah, right here. I think you're right. It's thematically connected for sure. Yeah. Well, let's keep moving because we've got some more things to discuss and cover. But again, this is some of the work that I do. Personally, when I'm coming up with my discussion questions, I'm going to look and I'm going to vet it along these lines. What's the language like? Is it creative? Have I heard this 100 times before? Does it directly relate to the passage? Can I think of 4 or 5 good responses in, the first 15 seconds of thinking about it? Yeah. How is this? You can start to do this and, have a little bit of a rubric for how you, value and kind of score your own questions. And I think that's a really important thing to do. Yeah, as you're thinking about this, variety is key. The more variety that you have, the more interest you're going to generate. So, the wording. You don't want 3 questions in your teaching that start with, what are some steps that we can take to implement? That's going to get real dry real fast. Think about, the difference in question types. Maybe one passage is how to apply something. Maybe you're drawing out some antithesis with your next question. What would be some dangers in a church that didn't practice this? You're talking about the negative vision. You want to switch that kind of stuff up. What are your goals with your questions? Are your goals to get people to think about this material for the first time? Is your goal to motivate stuck people to actually practice something they deep down know is good? You know, there's going to be different goals that you have, even in the same teaching. You know, you want the variety. It's the spice of life and of good teachings. Last point in this section here, good questions are not written. They are rewritten. I worked for the church now. Before I worked for the church, I worked as a magazine editor and writer for 10 years. Nobody has ever put out a good draft of anything the first time, okay? That stuff is edited, it's revised, it's changed to make it better. And discussion questions are no different than the stories that I used to write for the magazines. You know, we have to edit. Be humble, okay? You know, okay, you type something down in your Microsoft Word document. It's not golden right now. It can be, okay? It can become really good. But a lot of the stuff that we write down needs a second set of eyes. It needs our eyes on it again. You know, we need to change things and make the material that we've got the best it can be. And so I wanted to, this is a little experiment that I came up with. It's a little revision exercise. I'm going to take a question and I'm just going to show you some changes that I would make to it just to get the creativity flowing in the editing process. So here's our raw material. So I come up with this question in my outline. What do you guys think are some things that would help us to put spiritual growth into practice? And why do you say that this is important? Okay, some problems. First, I have to be honest with myself that I have been sly. I have been sneaky because I put two questions into one question and I have to repent of this immediately. Okay, there's no excuse for that. Two-part questions are fine. Just don't ask them at the same time. It's like trying to have a conversation at a bar. It's like, you know, people are all talking over each other. Nobody knows, am I talking about the first part or the second part? I'm responding to his question, 2A. And then, okay, I have thoughts on 1B, okay? Split them up. You know, if you went with this, you roll this one out, get 2 to 3, 4 responses, then ask this one. Don't ask them at the same time. Very confusing. So I split it up. Okay, now I recognize there's some linguistic padding in there that probably doesn't need to be there. So let's go ahead and nix that. When you launch a discussion question, you're probably implying that you're asking what people are thinking. Okay? It's implied. We don't need that. So, okay, we're a little bit neater, a little tidier. What are some things that would help us to put spiritual growth into practice? Why is this important? Okay, spiritual growth, pretty broad topic, to be honest. Kind of what we're doing here all the time encompasses a lot of different things. Let's get more specific. For you, if you came across a question where you were just asking about spiritual growth, you're going to want to figure out, what's my passage actually about? Is it about the Word? Are you reading 1 Peter 1 into 2? Are you talking about the craving the pure spiritual milk? Are you talking through Hebrews 10 that talks about assembling together and encouraging one another? Maybe communities in your crosshairs. Is it prayer? Am I teaching on the end of Colossians 4? You know, being watchful and thankful, sober-minded in prayer. You know, what's your topic? Just fill that in. Make it much more specific. You're going to get better discussion. You know, just for the sake of moving forward, we'll just say that our topic is, you know, trying to get people to practice daily prayer. So what would help us to put daily prayer into practice? Okay, so now we're funneling down into it. Things. It was difficult to get broader than spiritual growth, but things actually did. That's the one of the most generic words that you can throw into a question. What things are you talking about? Maybe you started a bush group at your workplace and you're just having a lunchtime Bible study. Well, these people need to know about first steps. You know, what daily prayer? What's the first step that we could take this week? What do we think? You know, maybe you need to get back. Maybe you've got some longtime Christians who have lost their zeal, and you need to get them back to foundational truths that make it necessary, make it awesome and inspiring to practice daily prayer. You know, maybe people are, you know, really starting to get it. Maybe they just need some good habits to develop. You've seen some growth. But what they need to do is take these occasional bursts of vitality and make it something that's part of their routine day in and day out. You know, I don't have a formula for you, but these are the kind of things that you want to start to look at. So I'm going to pick key truths. Now we're getting somewhere, right? What are some key truths that would help us to put daily prayer into practice? And then the last change I'm going to make here. These are, when we ask what are key truths or why is this important, when we use verbs of that type, it implies that there's a specific set of answers that we're looking for. What we need is conditional language. What could be some key steps? What might be? What would be? What may be? When you ask, it's just a little change in the verbiage. But when you do that, you know, you're opening things up to, I'm not just looking for the four correct answers that I have written down in my outline. I'm asking for your thoughts. What do you think? You know, this is wide open. There's some boundaries. There could potentially be some wrong answers, but you are not just asking for a certain set of right answers. And so this is what we're going to be ending up with. And I think this is vague and wordy and not very effective, but that's not bad. And you see what happened. I didn't have to throw away everything that I had done. I just had to change it and think through it. You know, if you find yourself not coming up with really good questions right off the bat, don't just keep erasing everything and then putting another question down that you're not satisfied with. Try this. Try revising. Try pecking and poking at it. You know, and I'll just copy it and paste it underneath and make a few changes and paste it underneath and make a few more changes. And you can watch that transformation from something that's not that good to something that's going to play. Yeah. Okay. Moving on to area two. Anybody have any questions about create, the first section? And if not, if you're thinking about it and percolating through, we'll have some time for questions at the end too. Okay. Deliver. When we're thinking about, okay, so we've got our questions, we're rolling through our teaching outline. You know, we are aware that, you know, we're moving towards a discussion question. The audience, the people that you're teaching to, should also sense that it's time to discuss. One of the things that really hinders good group discussion is when a question just seems to come out of nowhere. It's like, you know, the teacher's really getting on a rant, and then it's like, and so what do you guys think about not accepting a free gift? And you're just kind of like, whoa, what happened? Oh, we're talking now? You're not talking anymore? What just happened? Okay, it just kind of like smacks you in the face. The audience should be sensing that, oh man, we're heading towards something that needs to be talked about, okay? There's a lot of ways you can do this. Maybe it's tension. Maybe it's potential conflict. Maybe it's your first time teaching and you got the very lucky draw of teaching on head coverings in 1 Corinthians 11, okay? Awesome, I know some people that's happened to. I would never do that as a leader. I would never shackle somebody with a first timer like that. But in a teaching like that, there's going to be some stuff to discuss because people are going to have a sense of confusion, maybe even frustration, maybe even anger if you're teaching at home church and you've got some first timers or non-believers there. You're going to be moving. You want to funnel people's emotions, people's attention down to a place where it's time to discuss something. Not just a free-for-all where people are just yelling their thoughts or something like that, but you want to bring people down to a point where it's like, all right, now let's talk about this. Let's come together and think through this. You can do this with excitement, too. Think about, okay, you're teaching through 1 Peter 1. And, you know, you get through the opening, and then it's just like Peter unleashing just the many, many amazing, exquisite blessings of what it's like to know Jesus Christ personally, to have that new birth and the internal inheritance and the living hope. And it's like, yeah, people are just, man, people are starting to bubble over. People are paying attention. People are nodding their heads. And then you want to get to a point where like, all right, let's come together and we can bring our insight on how amazing something like this is. That's a great time to discuss. It's like people are going to get the sense like, okay, yeah, this is going to be real good. Maybe there's a clear antithesis that you want to draw. Maybe you're reading, maybe the ethos in your home church has started to sag, and you are teaching through Acts 2. And you're just talking about Luke's amazing portraits of what the early church was like with daily fellowship and breaking the bread and deep love relationships. And people are starting to notice, you know, this is not where we're at. And we got a long way to go with what we're doing compared to what they were doing. And people are going to recognize, man, that's a great point to discuss something. Starting to talk about some antithesis, you know? What would be some steps that we as a church have to undertake in order to see something like this happen? Man, good question right there. But again, it's not so much in the development of the question as it is tracking people along to get to the discussion that can be just as important. Clear delivery sets up success. Here's an example. Okay, Colossians 3. So, first two verses, we get talking about setting our hearts and our minds on things above. What I'm going to do in a situation like this is, okay, I'm going to read this. And I'm going to draw out some theological points. As I move to my discussion, what I like to do is something like this. I like to have a kind of a framing or an anchoring statement that connects the question to the topic we just covered. So I'm going to read this, draw out those points, and then I'm going to be like, all right, let's take some time and talk with each other. Paul insists that mindset is crucial for growth. And then I'm going to roll out my question. What might be some key connections between our focus and our actions? Something like that. You see what I've done here? This statement links this to this. It also lets people, you know, we're going to talk about this question I wanted to throw out. You know, Paul says that mindset is crucial for growth. And then I launch my question. Think about it like this. I like this illustration. I use this with a disciple. He felt like it was pretty compelling. This is a yellow jacket. Just what you were thinking about, right? You know, clear connection. So a yellow jacket, when it wants to sting, it doesn't just fly around and then eventually just bump his stinger into something. He flies around, he sees a target, he lands, plants the feet, stings. Okay? That's what you're doing when you have one of those framing or anchoring statements. It's like planting your feet before launching that stinger. Okay? It's like, think about it like in a really good NBA jump shot. You know, it's pros can make them, but not always, when they're just kind of flailing away and just throwing up a shot. But much better success rate is like catching, planting the feet, and then shooting the ball. That anchoring statement is the planting of the feet. It helps stabilize thing and push it forward. Then our last point on this section is sometimes the most difficult to follow. Is that good? You need to fight through some discomfort, okay? You need to ask one question one time, and then you sit quietly and wait. Up to 10 seconds, which seems like 10 years. Don't crack under the pressure. You can do it, okay? The worst thing that you want to do, okay, the worst mistake is asking a question and then kind of like slightly rephrasing it and then slightly rephrasing it again. And then, you know, people are very unsure what the question is. I've heard some rephrasings lately that are really just 3 or 4 different questions. And it's just, you know, it's just nerves percolating into the actual conversation. We need to avoid that. You don't want to be note dependent when you're teaching a home church or a cell group or anything. You want to know your material. But you have complete license complete freedom. Two, when you get to your discussion question, grab your notes, grab your outline, read right from the sheet your anchoring statement and your question, and then you put your paper back down. You read that question one time only, and then you sit and wait and smile. Talk to them after the teaching. I don't rephrase questions because they're good as they are. You can repeat it, absolutely, but when people ask you to rephrase your question, it's just like, we shouldn't have questions that need to be rephrased, I guess, but a lot of times it's just people weren't paying attention. Yeah, and you don't have to, you know, rub their nose in it or anything, you know, just be like, all right, here's what we were talking about, and just repeat the same exact thing that you said.
Okay.
And if you need to read it off the sheet again, there's no harm in that.
Okay. So maybe even repeat the setup.
Yep. Yep. Because if you slightly rephrase it, you know, some people are nervous and they want to make sure that they, you know, have their response calibrated to what you originally said. So if somebody's got a thought and then this guy asks you to rephrase it, this person's going to get nervous and may not respond. Okay, you know, it may back them off to the point where they're too shy to do it.
And they could share. That's a good point.
Yeah. So don't rephrase. I mean, eventually, if you get 10 seconds and people are completely blank-faced and they are just confused, you're going to have to maybe massage your points or throw out a slightly different version of, you know, just to get something going. But what we just don't want to see is that, you know, okay, so what are some things that, okay, so here's an example that I've seen. You know, what are some things that would help us to practice prayer? And, you know, like, God is telling us that, you know, prayer is important. And so how would we, like, take steps to get to a deeper prayer life? And, you know, if you pray, then, you know, that's good. But really what we're trying to get at, what I'm trying to say is, you know, the steps that we can take to start praying more for others. And it's like, whoa. And then what happens is then somebody's like, can you repeat your question? And it's like, I've got to say that whole mess all over again. Ooh, that's dangerous territory. So very calmly, this is why it's good to do that revision work. Do that vetting. Because you want to come with crisp, clean, edited questions that are easy, not complicated, filled with words that are easy to say in that setting. And that'll be a much greater success rate. Yeah, right there. Absolutely. Well, you made a lot of sense right there. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point. You want to rehearse. You want to send out a couple, maybe your questions to your, you know, leader, discipler, leadership team. See if maybe you've got a wordsmith there that can cut it down a little bit. There's no shame in that. Ask for help. We're all gifted. We're all coming together for this purpose. Okay, so here we are at the point of guiding the discussion. So what we're doing here is our questions are written, our questions are deployed, people are starting to talk. This is one of the most terrifying things that you can undergo. Because if you're teaching in a home group setting that, you know, when you've got some evangelists in your group, you're essentially handing over, in some ways, control of the meeting to people you may have never met. That's kind of crazy. But, you know, very rarely do you get into situations that are just a complete disaster. God really has his hand on these situations. And this is actually where the fun starts, I think. I really like this part of a teaching the best. Your role as a discussion guider is like a good rock drummer. My dad, who is a drummer and a musician, lifelong drummer and musician, used to tell me that the best rock drummers are the ones that you forget are there. Now, if they weren't there, the whole song would fall to the ground in complete shambles. What they're doing is expert and completely necessary by keeping the tempo and pushing the song forward. You just don't know it because they've slyly kind of hidden themselves in the background, okay? And yet what they're doing is so important. And that's essentially very much like what we're doing as when we guide discussion in a home group setting or a cell setting. You know, what we want to see is we want to guide things and corral things and encourage and infuse some passion and some energy where needed, but we don't want to be the main event. If we wanted the leader to be the main event, we'd just do lecture all the time. Okay, that's why we have discussion. It's so the one person at the head can step back and celebrate the Holy Spirit's ability to work through a group of people. 1 Corinthians 14 is a good verse on this. It's everybody should come with something to contribute to a meeting. And a lot of times, discussion is where that's played out. You know, people can come with their thoughts and their wisdom. So in other words, in summary, be like Ringo, okay? Who is maybe the best rock drummer in history, and we can argue about that after the teaching. Not the flashiest drummer. Not even the most technically proficient drummer. But he does an amazing job of powering some of our favorite songs without even making his presence felt. So what do we do as we're being this good drummer? Well, you're kind of juggling a lot of different things. You want to summarize quickly. You know, the one thing we want to resist here is sermonizing. So somebody's like, you know, I think, you know, one of the things to put prayer into practice is to, you know, make an effort to pray with a roommate like multiple times a week. That is such a good point. I remember when I was living in a ministry house and, you know, I would do this and I really found a lot of fruit. And I remember that, and it's like the teacher is just going on with this personal experience. You've completely dwarfed what this person said. And everybody's getting a little bit more tired. A little bit more, a little bit closer to thinking about catching Pokemon in the hallway. You know, you want to just summarize quickly and move on to what the next person has to say. You want to encourage good responses. Somebody in your home church just jumped off a cliff in terms of risk, raised their hand, shared their thoughts in front of a group of people. A lot of us don't like doing that. That's a risk. And we need to reward people when they took a risk and they were willing to put themselves out there for Christ. So, for people who have taught, let's get a little survey. What are some very quick, momentary encouragements that we offer to people who have made a good point? What do you guys like to use? That's a great point. Good work. Yeah, right here.
We like to say GP.
Good point. GP, all right. Brevity is a thing. Awesome. Yes.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Nice and loud.
Yeah, I love it that you found this thing out, or I love it that you shared this observation, kind of making them really feel like they're contributors to teaching.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it seems like they did something. They found something that we didn't find. Yeah, right here.
Kind of just like to pause for a second and be like,
yeah. Yeah, good. I really agree with that, yeah. Okay, right here.
You know, I feel special when the teacher is like, yeah, I didn't think about that. That's a really good point. Obviously, don't lie if you didn't think about it. it is rewarding.
It's a high compliment. You studied a lot for this to look at this passage, and if somebody came up with something that you didn't find, that's awesome. Yeah. One more. Yeah, sure is. And we'll go one more.
I'm glad you did the deeper searching.
Yeah, so we're telling them you didn't stay at the surface. Thanks for diving deep. Excellent. You know, sometimes need to, so we're encouraging, we're summarizing. Sometimes, you know, we need to find the gem in the mountain. And so sharing. There we go. You know, some people are just ramblers. I've heard of a 9-minute home church comment. We need a moment of silence. Yeah. Okay, so Matt, I should have put 0.5, cut off a 9-minute comment. Right. Yeah, that's right. That's on the teacher. Okay, so this is just, you know, some people are ramblers, some people are nervous, some people take a risk or they're new. You know, sometimes you just need to find that one little snippet of truth and highlight that and move on. And then also, this is rare, but we need to challenge unedifying content. You know, it is on us. This is kind of where we step to the forefront in discussion. If you hear hate speak or anger or slander or just somebody saying something false about, you know, God or the Bible or something. You know, if somebody's like, well, I just can't believe that God just hates all the gays. I've heard stuff like that. And it's like, you need to step back to the forefront and be like, that is not true. Okay? Now, or you need to say, you know, if somebody's really angry, you need to be like, you know what? Especially if it's in somebody in your home church, you need to be like, brother, this is a place where we can gently and calmly share ideas, and we're not going to have anger like that. Okay? So we need to watch it. We can discuss and we can disagree, but we're going to do that in a spirit of gentleness and compassion. Stuff like that. That's pretty rare. Sometimes people will ask you questions that you don't know the answer to. What do you do? Throw it to the audience. So somebody's like, well, why do you think that, you know, God says some crazy thing in some obscure Old Testament passage? First thing you do? I think that's a really interesting question. What do we think? It's the first line of defense because you just opened up your mind and you've included the minds of maybe 30 other people who may have read that passage, something like that. If somebody asks you something difficult, a Bible difficulty, the worst thing that you can do is, why don't we talk about that after the teaching? Don't do that. Looks like you're hiding. Best thing to do, if you feel a little trapped, maybe you can throw it back out to the audience. But best thing to do, if it's something that's real tricky, just say a few key points about God's stance on that and be like, we don't have time to go into much more. I think we could talk about that after. If you just offer the tip of the iceberg, it just looks like time is actually your main constraint, which often it really is. You know, if you get into one of these hot button issues, offer a little bit of truth. Be like, that's not really what we're talking about here. I think it'd be cool if we got into more on this after the teaching. But don't just go straight to that because it looks like, you know, we're ashamed or embarrassed about God's stance. And we never want to put that vibe off in a teaching. You know, we're not embarrassed about what the Bible says. We celebrate it. And we know that we have a loving God who answers all questions and, you know, is awesome. So we want to give that vibe off in the teaching, even if we can't give people the treatise that they're looking for in home church teaching. Another thing we need to do as we guide forward the discussion is we need to know when to end. Here is a bar graph. I think you have this in your notes. This is generally how home church commenting works, how a discussion works, give or take, depending on your home church. You know, okay, so you roll out the question here. People are thinking about the question. They're formulating ideas. People are nervous about breaking the ice. You know, somebody's, you know, taking the plunge. You know, the interest is building. People are starting to synthesize ideas. I like what Joe said, but I was also thinking about this. People are playing off your question and other responses. You know, and then you start to really peak. Man, this is one of my favorite times in a home church meeting is when people are just, you know, you got multiple hands up. People are engaged. People are, you know, looking at you, they're paying attention and nodding along with the other commenters. This is the peak, good vibe going on. And then eventually, you know, even the best discussion questions are never going to go forever. And eventually stuff peters out, mostly because the audience feels satisfied with the content that everybody came up with. Feel like we actually learned something. That's awesome. So, where do we cut off discussion? Well, here's a couple of points that I like to think through. If we cut it off too early, it's like people are kind of frustrated, you know? It's like we had something going, but we just didn't really get there. It's like going to Cedar Point and like you're in the Top Thrill Dragster and you get all the way to the top and you're like, heck yes, this is amazing. And then it's like the ride stops. Okay, it's broken. We have to walk down the stairs. It's like, oh, come on. What a jip. That's so too early. Bad idea. Too late. People are going to be bored. And really, you've sapped all of your momentum to propel you into the rest of the teaching. Again, we're not just talking about discussing for just the sake of hearing other people talk. We're talking about a guided discussion that's going to have discussion really propelling the entirety of the teaching. And so if you go down here to the bottom, then all the momentum has fizzled. Ideally, you want to start cutting off discussion right here, because then the rest of that momentum is careening into the next portion of your lecture. That drives things really powerfully into the next part. Again, I can't completely map this out for you. You know, it's not a time limit. There's no specific formula. But generally, think about this. Do not end discussion once all the hands are down. That's a bad gauge. Sometimes that happens. Things just naturally come to a close where everybody's still excited. But, you know, it's okay to end discussion with some hands in the air. You know, the worst thing that people can do, and I've seen this happen, is really bad question, three generous, charitable rescue responses, and wait, the guy, all those have been exhausted, and then the teacher's like, so any other thoughts on that? And then waited another like 10 seconds. It was painful. Don't do that. All the momentum's gone. You're limping into the rest of your teaching. Here's something that I've found that I really like. We're getting that sweet spot going. We've got some momentum. We need to verbally transition to the next part of our teaching. We should point out the progress made, and we should develop kind of a linking statement to what we're going to cover next. So here's an example. So, all right, we're teaching out of 1 Peter 5. And we're talking about some leadership stuff and humility. And so in our outline, and mentally, we've prepared to cover this section, and then we're going to cover verse 8 after it. And in here, we see like, man, this is going to be a good, man, this is pretty powerful material. We got to get a discussion going in here. And so what we're going to do is we're going to read verses 6 and 7, and then I would throw out a discussion question like this. What might be some character qualities of a leader who is humble before the Lord? Okay? So people, you know, we get 7-8 responses going. Then I'm going to do something like this. Awesome. So I'm drawing discussion to a close. Awesome. I feel like we painted a really compelling picture. Good work, guys. And another of the hallmarks of a humble leader is recognizing he has an enemy. Let's see what Peter says on that. So again, you see what I did. You know, we've got, we discussed this, launched the question, and then I'm using the momentum from that discussion to propel me into the stuff that's a little bit right after it. And I feel like that's pretty effective. You also, people, when the group does a good job discussing, we should be vocal and encouraging about that. Heck yeah, man, we covered some good ground on that. Excellent work. Man, I feel really built up after that discussion. Man, thank you guys for thinking critically about this issue. Something like that can be really good. I mean, it just, especially if you've got a group that's a little bit, hesitant in discussion, any encouragement, any warmth that you can project in those situations can do a lot of good.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.